guide into the face of a grand adventure. Travis turns to me.
Pops, we thought you'd never come, he says through a mouthful of sweets.
I was gone for literally a minute. I pull my pointed witch's hat back on. Though I've left the mask and wand Travis gave me inside my house, along with Isabella's shield. I know I was supposed to be an undercover witch, but I guess I'll have to be an out-and-proud witch for this expedition. I loop the strap of my heavy camera back around my neck. It's a clear night for photographs, so if I get busted, at least I'll have some good photos of this blood moon. I walk down the wooden steps to join my friends, and Isabella turns to me as I spin the leather key ring around one finger.
I got the keys, I say.
I can't believe we're doing this, says Isabella, as if she's never broken a rule in her life. Travis shrugs.
Believe it.
Isabella grins and tucks her spirit board box under her right arm. There's a giddiness in the way she carries herself. Her eyes are bright and glinting. She seems excited to check out the Sanderson house. And honestly, so am I, even if I know my parents might kill me. Fighting my instinct to stay put, I say,
let's go then.
We circle my house, slip out through the garden gate, and hurry down the street, the sounds of laughter and music from Mom's party growing more distant. Trick-or-treaters swarm Salem with sugar-crazed faces and bags full of loot. A princess waves at us. Her dad, who's dressed like a pea, throws in a good-natured nod. Buzz Lightyear and Woody aren't far behind them. Their green army men buckets heavy enough that they each have to use both hands to hold them. They catch up to their dad, showing off their candy bounty. Two kids, a boy and a girl dressed as peanut butter and jelly, shove past us rolling a red wheelbarrow full of candy. I pull my phone from my coat pocket.
Isn't it almost 10?
I ask my friends. Travis nods to an adorable gaggle of kids dressed as Snow White's seven dwarves.
Kids in Salem go hard, he jokes.
Will you two hurry up? Isabella calls playfully over her shoulder. We quicken our pace.
Travis, why am I suddenly freaking out? I whisper to him.
Because you're doing the one thing your parents don't want you doing, he points out.
Right, thanks, I hiss. Now I feel much better.
We near Old Burial Hill, where the streetlights are farther and farther apart, and the yards are large and overgrown.
You don't think we're going to actually find anything there, do you?
Travis asks me. Definitely not, I say. But if getting into that rotting building 25 years ago catalyzed the world's most bizarre love story for my parents, maybe there's something to a healthy dose of Halloween hijinks, I add in a whisper. 10 paces ahead, Isabella stops and points at the graveyard in front of us.
Creepy, right? Are we even going the right way?
Travis asks, looking around. The Sanderson house is just on the other side of the graveyard. Let's cut through it, I suggest.
Unless you're both too chicken?
Isabella turns around and smiles at me.
Gumption, I like it. Oh, gum? I'd like a piece, please, says Travis.
Isabella and I shake our heads, and we all stride forward arm in arm. At the top of the hill, tucked into the woods, there's a dusty little chapel that no one ever uses. There's not much to it. Just four stone walls, a handful of pews, and some miraculously intact windows. But I found myself going there more and more as graduation looms closer. There's a profound sense of calm that comes with sitting among the rows of dusty candles. The sun slanting through cobwebbed windows. Gloomy though it may be, there are few places in Salem better for being left alone than the cemetery. And with the solitude beyond that aging wrought iron gate with Old Burial Hill emblazoned atop it, comes a certain amount of peace and security, even now.
So, Bella, huh?
Travis puts words to a question that's been nagging at me, too. We leave the graveyard gate behind and start up the hill. There isn't a path, so we have to unlink our arms and pick our way around the headstones, which run the gamut from barely visible to morbidly ostentatious.
Katie Taylor isn't as good at anything as she is at pushing buttons, Isabella grumbles, annoyed.
I glance at Travis, but he shrugs. We both know Isabella's ignoring the actual question. Did the sweetest and most popular girl at Jacob Bailey High used to be friends with this most vicious bully? I think I'd remember something like that. But maybe it was supposed to be a secret. If it's true, maybe it's too hard for Isabella to admit. She saw how awful Katie was to me today. Maybe Isabella doesn't want me to think less of her for their one-time secret friendship.
I can't believe I let Katie get to me.
I pass a towering tombstone engraved with willow branches, and for a moment it blocks out the moon.
I can, says Travis. You care way too much about what other people think.
I know, I tell him. It's a critique I've heard before, including from him. But it's not like I can just turn it off.
It's a curse,
Isabella chimes in. But that's also a good thing, in a way. It means you're a person who cares about things. I look gratefully at her, the spirit board box still clenched under her right arm. She maneuvers expertly around gravestones and overgrown swells of grass as if she's done it 100 times before. She even evades an unmarked stubby headstone that I trip over a moment later.
It's not a curse, says Travis. It's a choice. As my mom would say, you decide not to pay any mind.
Yeah, well, Isabella breathes heavily from the incline.
My mom would say you need to take them to court.
Travis laughs, but shakes his head. The chapel appears on the rise ahead of us. Its small bell tower peaks above the tree line.
You know, Travis pops a handful of candy into his mouth. When my family first moved here, I read that the bells in the chapel toll on their own each Halloween night.
Isabella glances at me, her eyebrows raised.
Poppy?
What? Now I'm the resident expert in everything supernatural? I slowly narrow my eyes and my mouth sets into a long straight line.
Pretty much, says Travis.
Well, I've never heard it ring, I say.
It's supposed to wake the spirits, Travis adds, and let them regain their bodies.
An owl hoots loudly nearby and all three of us jump. I clutch the silver keys more tightly in my hand, and then Travis and I laugh nervously. Isabella turns her head around so wildly looking for the source of the noise that I fear it will do a complete 360 spin.
This was a bad idea, she says. We should turn back.
But I press onward.
Come on, we're almost there.
From the trees comes a series of sharp snapping noises, like bone-dry branches being broken for firewood. I grab Travis's arm.
What was that?
I point with the key ring to the trees.
A rabbit, he says. Or maybe a fox. Pedestrian by magical creature expert standards.
He straightens his lab coat, showing off its brightly colored mystery stains in the thin light of the moon. I take a deep breath, then smile reassuringly at a frozen Isabella.
Come on, guys,
I say, hurrying forward into a grassy clearing while they follow right behind me.
No rest for the wicked.
I'm thankful we left the claustrophobia and bad juju of the house party, despite whatever we're about to do.
Once we get to the Sanderson house, I say,
we can use the spirit board to... Before I can finish, something grabs my ankle. I shriek, tumbling forward, and crash into Travis, whose body softens my fall.
Sorry.
I'm careful to protect my camera as I roll off him. He grunts and sits up, rubbing the shoulder that has the bloody plastic unicorn horn in it.
Are you guys okay?
Isabella asks us.
Yeah,
Travis manages, though he sounds as if the horn actually stabbed him.
Poppy, what about you?
Asks Isabella. I check my lens. Luckily, it's undamaged. I feel stupid for bringing it.
I'm okay. How'd you even trip?
Asks Travis, standing. Someone grabbed me, I think. But I know that's impossible. There's no one around but us.
On a tree root,
I say as Isabella helps me up. I notice there are no tree roots nearby. My confidence wavers.
A rock?
But I don't see any of those either. It's quiet again. I realize my hands are empty.
Crap! I dropped the keys.
I pull out my phone, which is fortunately also not broken, and turn on the flashlight app, sweeping the beam over the grass. I take a few steps back and look in the other direction, in case the keys bounced when they hit the ground. "They're not here," I say, running my hands through thick tufts of grass. Travis cleans his glasses on his lab coat before slipping them back on. The bold green frames seem to glow a little in the moonlight.
"That's impossible. They can't have gone far," he says,
turning on the flashlight on his phone too.
"Well, I guess this means we should go back," Isabella says,
her phone's flashlight app also turning up nothing.
"The party's going to wrap up soon, and your mom and dad are going to realize you're missing. And if they call your parents, Travis, you'll be grounded until Cyber Monday."
"We're almost there, though," I say, shining my phone into the darkness ahead. The chapel is off to our left, shrouded in crooked trees, which means the cemetery's back fence and rear access gate are just a few feet away.
"But no keys," Isabella says, seeming glad to have a solid excuse to turn back.
"My family's story aside, the house is a Salem landmark. Everyone's tried to get inside at one point," I say, feeling the desperation rising in my voice. I refuse to give up on this plan.
"Anyway, the place is over 300 years old. I'm sure we can get in without the keys."
"Isn't that breaking and entering?" Isabella asks, concerned.
"Luckily, both my mom and your mom are pretty good lawyers," I say. "Plus, my parents practically own the property. Well, my Nana used to run it anyway."
Isabella and Travis size me up. "I'm pretty sure my parents broke in," I point out.
"Well, maybe they used my mom's keys, but it's pretty much the same thing. So if they find out, they can't possibly be mad at me."
"Touché," says Travis.
Isabella sighs and shrugs.
"Fine."
We let ourselves out of the cemetery and hurry across the deserted, cracked black asphalt overgrown with weeds. No one ever really drives this part of Cemetery Loop. The graves here are so old, and their inhabitants so long dead that no one's alive to remember them, much less go to the trouble to visit or leave flowers. The street lamps seem to reflect that too. They're low and dim and barely give enough light to illuminate the street, let alone anything beyond it. Ahead of us is the tall wrought iron fence that runs along the sidewalk between the street and the decrepit Sanderson property. The black iron spikes rise out of a low, crumbling rock wall, which seems to shrink back from the streetlights as if it's trying not to be seen. I run my fingertips along the stone. "They say the sisters' victims were buried in these walls, brick by brick."
"Delightful," Isabella mutters. "You know, I kind of like this Halloween historian side of you."
"So they were witches and bricklayers? Triple threats," says Travis. "Well, sort of."
Isabella turns to him.
"It's not as cute when you do it."
We reach the gate, which is fairly plain, just a big arch with wrought iron double doors. It's locked, as expected.
"Come on."
I take Isabella's boxed-up spirit board from her and slide it through the bars, then hoist myself onto the stone wall. "We can climb over."
"Is that something we can do?" Isabella asks.
I land with a huff and an ungraceful thud on the Sanderson side of the fence, then pick up the spirit board box. Travis joins me. Isabella hops the low stone wall and lands beside us, delighted.
Somehow it's far darker on this side. The only sound is the rustle of dried leaves, and I get this heavy, oppressive sense that we're being watched,
probably by security cameras put up around the premises, not by ghosts or supernatural things.
No, sir, no way. Because that's just a bunch of hocus pocus.
I've never set foot in the Sanderson house before. I'm not allowed. I've only heard about it from Mom, Dad, and Aunt Danny, the building described through the lenses of their memories. Seeing it in person, and so close, sends a chill down my spine. But I tell myself that my goosebumps are linked to the thought of getting caught at the house. It's a squat old cottage with a sagging roof and broken, grimy latticed windows. And there's an ivy-covered water wheel on the side that looks like it'll never spin again. The front door of the house is framed by windows that look out onto a porch with a few rotten wooden steps.
Oh, look! Gallows in the front yard! How quaint, Travis jokes.
We make it to the front porch without further complications. But Travis's attempt to break in with one of his fake scalpels ends with the plastic blade breaking clean off in the lock. Travis turns to us with his hands out.
No such lock.
Ha ha, I say flatly.
Hold up.
Isabella vanishes around the side of the house. I turn to Travis. This'll be fun. Beats my mom's party.
You're just thrilled to be breaking rules with Isabella Richards,
he whispers.
So?
I retort, elbowing him.
Shut it. She can be your Isabella,
he sings softly with a wink. I know Travis is trying his hand at matchmaker, but he's been insufferable ever since I told him about my crush on Isabella, and I could so throttle him right now. The moon, mostly obscured by leaves from the canopy of trees, peers down at us curiously. There's a loud thump from inside the house, and both Travis and I go dead silent.
What was that?
I whisper. Then the deadbolt thuds, and the door creaks open. I can hear my pulse thundering in my ears. The door opens wide enough to let moonlight in, revealing Isabella, who's grinning at us like she's just discovered Atlantis all on her own.
I climbed the water wheel,
she explains matter-of-factly before ushering us inside the musty-smelling house.
Now we're going Raiders of the Lost Ark up in here,
murmurs Travis.
Nice.
I follow him into the house. It's smaller than I expected. The walls seem to press in on one another, and the sheer quantity of furniture inside doesn't help. I shine my phone's flashlight around at the various tables, chairs, and cabinets.
I think the Sandersons were hoarders,
I whisper.
Light switch over here,
Isabella says, flicking it up and down a couple of times. Nothing happens.
But it doesn't work.
Together, our three phones' sweeping flashlights give the house's only room an eerie glow. The postcards and gift shop items have been dumped into boxes behind the counter. Silver lighters and small stuffed black cats with witches' hats. There's another big cardboard box by a curio cabinet that's taller than Travis. I peer in and see a mess of broken glass and weird objects. Feathers and desiccated herbs and spindly bones and a handful of things that I hope aren't body parts. Everything is covered in dust. I hold my phone overhead. In the narrow loft over the living space, I can just make out a few straw pallets wrapped in rough sheets. I point to it. My mom said the Sanderson sisters used to sleep up there, I say. Isabella stares up at the loft.
I can't believe I'm here, she breathes.
She wanders over to a wrought iron candle holder as tall as her chest. She touches the curved top of it.
This is where the black flame candle was,
she says. She looks around again.
The Sandersons lived here,
she adds, as if she truly can't believe it. And I can't blame her. I can't quite believe it all either. Being here definitely makes my family story feel a little more plausible, I say. I see the cabinet that Aunt Danny probably crouched behind before the witches first discovered her. There's also an overturned wooden chair that looks like the one Mom described. Emily Binks was killed here. And Aunt Danny was tied up and almost force-fed the witch's evil life force potion. Wow, it feels ridiculous to even think it. I lean over and run my palm down the chair's smooth wooden side. Oddly, the whole house gives me a profound sense of deja vu. Nearby, there's a big display case with cracked glass and caution tape to prevent anyone from getting cut. I sense my mom's involvement here. The placard beside the case reads, "This is the spell book of Winifred Sanderson." But the slanted platform inside the case is empty. You know, my parents are still upset about that spell book going missing, I say.
Oh, about that,
starts Isabella. Travis cuts in.
Maybe Principal Taylor found it and can't figure out how to make it work. I hear there's a good spell in there for making people less grumpy. Poor Principal Taylor.
I laugh.
Or Katie's got it locked away, ready for the day she finally decides to bewitch everyone into retweeting her clapbacks. I pass the big cast iron cauldron in the center of the room and a pair of skeleton cages dangling from the ceiling, large enough to hold two people each, and wander over to the stand where the black flame candle used to be. But of course the candle itself is locked in a safe in our attic. My mom checks on it twice a year, just to make sure no one has gotten their hands on it. I've heard plenty about this particular house of horrors, but confronting it IRL is bone-chilling.
"You guys," says Isabella.
She pulls an enormous book out of her messenger bag.
"I know I should have told you sooner, but I have Winifred's spellbook."
I freeze.
"What? How?" "I don't know. It showed up in my room on my bed earlier today. I don't know what to do about it. It's legit, the spellbook. Creepy closed eyeball and all."
Travis takes it from her hand.
"Whoa, it weighs a ton."
How does Isabella have the spellbook? This thing's been missing for 25 years.
"Let me see that," I breathe.
Travis hands it to me, and I hand him the spirit board box in return. I inspect the leather cover, with its clumsy stitches that look like scars and silver serpent embellishments. I open it and flip through dusty pages with black and red ink in archaic font, showing spells for all sorts of dark, creepy things. I slam the book shut. It's much easier to doubt my family story when I'm not staring right at the closed, wrinkled eyelid of the accursed artifact.
"Well, this changes things," I say.
"So, who wants to cast a spell?"
says Isabella jokingly.
"Tonight's the night. It's a blood moon. And someone wanted me to have this spell book. So which spell do we choose?"
"Hey, let's ask the witches," Travis shouts, opening the spirit board box.
"Travis, that was a joke," I say. "Right? I'm starting to feel uneasy." Travis takes the book from me and kneels by the cauldron, laying the mass market spirit board out in front of him with a book open to a random page next to it. The board itself is matte black, with delicate lines curling from the sides in shining gold and silver. Letters and numbers in bold white type dominate the center of the board. Isabella plops down beside him.
"Pops, do you believe your family story or don't you?"
Travis sticks out his tongue. "You know I don't," I say.
"Good. Me neither. Now lighten up. Let's have some fun," says Travis.
I force my eyes down to the spirit board and take a closer look at it, not quite sure how it works. In the middle of the board, the alphabet is printed in two arching lines. The numbers 0 through 9 are printed in a row below that, and along the bottom of the board are the words ghoul, by. Similarly, hell yeah occupies the top left corner of the board, and hell no takes up the top right corner. Centered between them is hey ghoul hey. Not exactly traditional.
"But I still have kind of a bad feeling about," I start.
Travis clears his throat and places his hands on the planchette.
"Hello? Calling all spirits?"
The three of us sit in silence. Isabella glances at me and mouths, "Are you okay?" I smile and nod. "Totally," I mouth back.
"Hey," Travis whispers to us, "how are spirits with college applications? Think they can help me get into Stanford?"
He looks around the room, as if expecting a spirit to volunteer. Grinning, Isabella jabs his arm with her elbow.
"Knock it off."
"If they can, I call dibs," I say. Isabella jabs me too, but I just laugh. And suddenly, I'm not so nervous anymore.
"That's genies for long shots and wish fulfillment. And we're short a lamp,"
says Isabella, also placing her hands on the planchette. "Seriously, though," I add, resting my own hand there too. But as the words leave my mouth, the book's pages flutter in a sudden, inexplicable breeze, and the planchette slides to the top of the board and comes to a stop. "Hey, ghoul. Hey." The witch is back.
No way is a ghost actually here in the Sanderson house communicating with us through this $5 toy store spirit board. I snatch my hand away from the cheap plastic planchette, jump up, and pace around the Sanderson house, crossing from the cracked, dusty cauldron to the wrought iron stand where the black flame candle used to sit before my parents locked away the remaining stub. I don't believe in ghosts and witches like my parents do, but if I did, I'd know that this is exactly how one could get free. I take a deep breath. Stop freaking out.
Poppy, you okay?
Isabella sounds genuinely worried for me.
You're moving it, I say to Travis. Good one.
I take off my basic witch hat and run a hand through my long, dirty blonde hair before putting it back on.
I'm not, Travis says where he sits. Cross my heart and hope to...
He isn't even looking at the board when the planchette slides on its own down to ghoul. Bye. Isabella and Travis glance down to where it settled. Isabella inhales sharply and takes her hand slowly off the board. Travis's eyes go wide, and he yanks his hand away from the board, too, and peers around the empty house.
It's not us, Isabella says to me.
So, what do we do now? I ask, my gaze flitting between Travis and Isabella. Isabella bolts up.
Leave? Obviously. What else would we do?
I bite my lip and wonder fleetingly what it would mean if there were a spirit here. What if my parents and Aunt Danny have been telling the truth this whole time? I've spent so many nights staring up at my ceiling, wondering whether my relationship with my family would be less complicated if I knew what actually happened.
It's All Hallows' Eve with a blood moon. So if my mom is right,
if the blood moon actually is amplifying magic tonight, this might be my only chance to find out for sure. What if all my denying and Halloween hating has not only kept my parents' story under wraps, but also kept me from the truth?
No,
I hear myself say. Isabella meets my gaze. Her eyes are mesmerizing. Wide, dark pools with long lashes.
It's just a cheap board game,
I say with more confidence than I feel. Isabella hesitates, trying to read me.
I'm high-key over this ghost stuff, she says. But if you want to stay, I'll stay.
Me too,
says Travis.
Cool. We stay, I say. Let's see what the spirits want.
I kneel between my friends on the rough wood floorboards. I'm the first to reach for the planchette, and Travis and Isabella rest their fingers on it too.
I'm sorry about that, I say to the board, feeling a little silly talking to thin air.
But at least the three of us are in this together. Well, the three of us plus the disembodied spirit. The planchette slides back to, hey, ghoul, hey. I glance at Travis, and then at Isabella.
Who are you?
I ask the board, my gaze locked with Isabella's. The planchette skims along the board, and I tear my eyes from her to watch it. It points to the letter M, and then to the letter E.
I laugh. Helpful, I say.
Great, says Travis. The ghost is sassy.
Isabella shushes him. Let Poppy do her thing. You go, Poppy.
So,
how long have you been dead?
I ask casually. Isabella leans into me and whispers,
Master of ghost small talk. I dig.
I chuckle. But then my fingers seem to chase the planchette. It's moving so fast. 3, 2, 5.
325 years,
Isabella says, tone reverent, like she can't believe this is actually happening.
Or Texas,
Travis adds. I raise an eyebrow at him in question.
325. It's a Texas area code.
Travis is my best friend. Which means that I'm afforded the truly priceless gift of never having to laugh at his jokes.
You're right. A Texas area code makes so much more sense.
That means it'd be the year... Isabella's voice trails off. 1693.
Travis can do mental math faster than anyone I've ever known. I meet his eyes, then Isabella's. She bites her lip and looks back at the board, studying it like it's a textbook.
and finals are tomorrow. Are you a Sanderson? I ask. The planchette speeds up to the right corner. Hell no.
What's your name? I ask.
The planchette zips toward the bottom of the board and back to the top, nudging at the corners. I glance at Isabella, who's frowning at the board, eyebrows knit in concentration. I take a deep breath and repeat my question louder.
What's your name?
I read the letters out as they're selected.
T-E-L-L.
Then the planchette dips out of the alphabet for a second before diving back in.
Y-O-U. Tell you?
I repeat.
You want to tell me something?
The planchette shoots to the top left corner.
Hell yeah.
I swallow hard.
Okay, go on. I'm listening.
The planchette skitters around the board, stopping on letters just long enough for me to catch which ones they are.
My heart is racing, without permission from my brain. My mouth starts reading the words aloud faster than I could ever hope to comprehend them.
Some inside and some without, I hear myself say. One believes and one holds doubt. On All Hallows Eve, ere 12 is struck. Trade 3 souls.
Pops, says Isabella.
I think until sunup,
I finish.
We should quit while we're ahead, Isabella continues.
There's a pause, and the planchette makes its way to the bottom of the board. Ghoul bye. I pull my hands back, clasping them in my lap to hide the fact that I can feel them shaking. Travis and Isabella let go of the planchette, too. Isabella looks around the Sanderson house as if she's afraid something is about to happen.
What the heck was that? I ask.
The spell book snaps shut of its own accord, and we all scream. Then the planchette shoots off the spirit board and skitters across the room and under a cabinet.
Cobwebs run thick between the bottom of the cabinet and the floor, and the open shelving reveals ancient jars of pickled things, some of which look like children's ears. We stare at the book for a long, tense moment.
Good thing nothing weird happened,
says Travis, a slight tremor in his voice undermining his deadpan tone. The next thing I hear is Isabella shouting, and then everything around us flies into the air. Winifred's spell book hovers, opening and glowing green around the edges. I take cover as a chaise lounge and the black flame candle holder rocket into the air. The display case for Winifred Sanderson's spellbook flies up, as well as a wooden dining table and boxes of crap from the ticket counter. A strong wind whips through the house, swirling the spirit board. Witch-hatted black cat plushies and my own witch hat, Sanderson's sister postcards, and other debris. Drawers and cabinets snap open and shut like loud, hungry mouths. An animal lunges at me, and I scream before realizing it's a stuffed and mounted squirrel. Jaws frozen open in an angry hiss. It bounces off my arm and flies away, back into the whirlwind. Travis and Isabella shout and raise their arms to protect their faces from flying taxidermy. It feels like the room is spinning. The wind tugs at my hair, winding it around and around, the air twisting it in a vortex. My camera flies off from around my neck. I grab the strap, preventing it from soaring away completely. The floorboards jump, making me shriek, and an unnatural lime green light shines from beneath them, as if someone's run neon bulbs under the house.
What did we do?
I yell over clattering and crashing.
I'm going to go with the obvious answer and say we angered the big, dumb, evil spirits, Pops,
shouts Travis. There's a crack of thunder and bright burst of yellow lightning that seems to be coming from inside the house. A crash nearby, not from thunder this time, makes me jump. I peek up to find that the dining table has landed miraculously on its feet beside me. I reach for Isabella and wince from the shock of electricity that passes between our hands.
I drag her under the table with me. Travis, I call. Get over here. He scrambles over and joins us.
Don't have to ask me twice.
Then the air goes perfectly still, and all is silent for a moment before the airborne debris showers down around us at once. It thumps and patters against the tabletop overhead, including the two skeleton cages, which roll onto the ground where they rock and teeter. The three of us cluster closer together, trying to avoid the falling fragments. The spellbook slams shut and lands at our feet, and Isabella quickly snatches it up and hugs it as if to prevent it from opening again. And then the whole house goes silent once more. I can hear us all breathing heavily.
What was that?
Whimpers Travis, his eyes darting around wildly. He looks at Isabella.
And where the hell did you get that spirit board? Grim, grinning ghosts and sons?
Hello? Did you not see when the spellbook was floating in the air and glowing? She retorts, waving the book. What spell did we just read? I ask. Isabella cautiously opens the book and rifles through its pages, then stops.
An exchange spell? She says. What's that?
Travis asks. So let me get this straight. We read a spell from the book? How did the spell from the book? I say. My heart is still pounding, partly from the adrenaline and partly because I know this is all my fault. The blood moon, the spell book, the stupid spirit board. I never should have offered to take my friends here and perform a spirit summoning. Ever since I can remember, even when I was just a little girl, I've done everything in my power to make sure no one else heard the story my family told me, the story they swore was true. And now... Isabella opens her mouth to speak, but she freezes when we hear the wooden slats of the front porch creaking under slow, deliberate footsteps. Isabella shuts the book and presses into my right side, and Travis clings to my left arm. We're all shaking like leaves. I pray it doesn't give us away to whoever or whatever is about to enter the house. I hear the doorknob rattle and give, and I realize we didn't lock it behind us when we came in. The front door to the Sanderson house creaks open. I take a deep breath, bracing myself. The door continues to swing back on its hinges, eventually bumping into the wall. The figure in the door frame is towering and backlit, with a bushy crown of fire-red curls haloed by the toasted moonlight. It can't be. Can it? Try to get into the loft and down the water wheel, I whisper to my friends.
I'm not about to die for you,
Travis whispers back.
Shh,
Isabella hisses. She's gone from terrified to observant. The figure steps into the house, floorboards thudding beneath heavy shoes. It pauses, looking slowly around as if trying to remember exactly where it left something precious. Two more sets of feet thunder up the steps, and I scrabble toward Travis, gesturing for him to move. But it's too late. Lights spring on. Travis shrieks, Isabella winces, and I flip over the table to create a barricade. Dust goes everywhere, including up my nose.
Poppy, what are you doing?
I stand up, hacking and spitting. My parents are in the open doorway, Aunt Dani in front of them dressed as the Queen of Hearts, with high, drawn-on eyebrows, dramatic blue eyeshadow, a huge red wig, and an extravagant dress. Mom's platinum blonde wig looks more frazzled than at the party, but the blue lightning bolt across her right eye and cheek is in perfect glittery condition, and her short, structured black dress didn't rumple at all on the car ride over. Dad, his Hollywood sign headband still snapped over his dark hair, is standing by an open circuit breaker box, which explains why the lights wouldn't work earlier. There must have been a power surge. I can't believe, I thought. Oh, thank God, I say, breathing hard and letting out a little laugh. I feel so stupid for thinking my friends and I actually brought back witches from beyond the grave. Then again, I have no idea how to explain what just happened, or how Isabella got the spell book. Isabella also gets to her feet and hides the spell book behind her back. Mom crosses her arms over her chest, and when I see the look on her face, I consider ducking back behind the overturned table.
Instead, I clear my throat and turn toward my aunt. Aunt Danny, this is my friend Isabella. And Travis is hiding behind the table. Travis and Aunt Danny often riff for hours over family dinners. But now he sheepishly lifts an arm and gives my aunt a microscopic wave. I kick Travis. He only shakes his head.
I told you, he said through clenched teeth. I'm not about to die for you.
Aunt Danny glances over her shoulder at my parents. Then she reaches up and drags off her Queen of Hearts wig, revealing her fair, honey-colored hair tied back in a bun. She pulls it down, shaking out the shoulder-length waves. That thing was giving me a migraine anyway. She crosses the room to shake Isabella's hand. Isabella's other hand is awkwardly behind her back, hiding the heavy spellbook. It occurs to me that this is the weirdest meet-the-family scenario ever. After Aunt Danny greets Isabella, she leans toward me. I stare into her calm green eyes outlined in smoky makeup and catch a whiff of vanilla, which tells me she's been frosting cupcakes. That explains why she was so late to my mom's party. She glances at my parents, and in a stage whisper, she says,
"They're angrier than they look."
I stare at my aunt, whose brick red lips are turned up in a secretive smile.
"Is that supposed to make me feel better?" I hiss.
Mom clears her throat and puts her hand on her hip. She looks around the house, then back at me, and shakes her head.
"You came here tonight."
"Of all nights," she begins.
We can explain," I say. Mom cuts in.
"You don't need to explain.
I overheard Katie Taylor telling her friends how lame it is that you went to get spooked at the Sanderson house." She pauses. "Not that I think you're lame, but I am still upset with you. And just what have you done to this house?" I look back at my parents, searching for the right words. I really don't know how to explain what happened, but I'm sure there must be some non-supernatural explanation. I'm not about to go down the same paranoid rabbit hole as my family. "There was a windstorm," I say. "But you're here now, and everything seems fine." Even I hear my voice go up an octave at the end.
"A windstorm? In the Sanderson house?" asks Mom. "On the night of the blood moon?"
Travis stands up then, quickly surveying the debris strewn around the room.
"Mrs. Dennison," he says. "Mr. Dennison, I am so sorry. There was a cat, and we were afraid it was lost, and we chased it through the gate without even realizing where we were, and..."
It's super obvious he's cobbling his lie together one piece at a time.
"Do you know how surprised we were to end up in here?" he continues. "I've never personally been so surprised."
Mom looks shaken by the talk of a cat, and she takes Dad's hand.
"Poppy, what exactly did you do?"
she asks me, studying the wreckage. I almost wish the green glow beneath the floorboards would return to swallow me whole. "We may have found the spellbook and tried to summon the dead, but it didn't work," I say. "I'm sure it's just drafty in here or something."
"The spellbook," Mom gasps. "Where is it?"
Isabella pulls it out from behind her back. "Trick or treat?"
"Where did you find it?"
Mom whispers, shocked. Isabella carefully stoops and places it on the floor, then slowly backs away from it, but doesn't offer an answer. Dad puts his hands on his head.
"What were you thinking?" he asks me.
His voice has that shaky, frustrated tone that tells me Aunt Danny is right. He really is angrier than he looks.
"I guess we weren't," says Isabella, looking to me for backup.
What do I say? That we came here on Halloween night to prove that their story about the Sanderson sisters and a talking cat isn't remotely true? And, by the way, jury's still out?
"Poppy, haven't we taught you anything?"
Mom says.
"This is the only thing we've ever asked you not to do, and you go behind our backs?"
She's angry, but there's also an edge of hurt to her voice. You put your friends in danger, too. Do you realize that?
She eyes the book and turns to Dad.
Oh, Max, I have a very bad feeling about all of this.
To my right, Isabella shifts uncomfortably, and hot blood rushes to my face.
Okay, okay, Aunt Fanny says, hands on hips. Max, we didn't exactly heed the warnings about coming up here to flip through books and let virgins light candles. I seem to remember that I was the one overruled 25 years ago about coming to this creepy house.
She glances at me and says out of the corner of her mouth,
You didn't let anyone light a candle, did you?
I shake my head ever so slightly, and Aunt Danny lets out a small sigh of relief.
That's not the point, says Dad.
That's exactly the point, Max, says Aunt Danny, rounding on him. Tell him, Allison.
Mom cups my cheek in one of her hands, searching my face, and I feel a horrible sinking feeling settle in my stomach. I'm sorry, I tell her. I know we shouldn't have come.
Oh, Poppy, she says gently. We're just glad you're all okay. We love you so much and couldn't bear.
And then Mom's expression turns to one of shock, and she's gone. And then Aunt Danny is gone, and Dad, striding across the room, disappears mid-step.
What?
I start, reaching into the empty air, but my voice catches in my throat. A pair of disembodied hands with freakishly long nails appears in front of us, gnarled fingers clawing at the air like they're prying open elevator doors. The hands struggle to widen the fissure in the invisible veil, and the air seems to part further, a green glow flickering around its edges. I see an emerald dress with white laces crisscrossing up the front, revealing a narrow length of royal blue silk. I hear an indignant huff, and then the tear opens wider still, and a woman squeezes her way through, nearly tripping as she extracts one leg and then the other, her long green skirts getting caught in the narrow opening between worlds. When the woman turns to us, I see that her face is flushed and her mouth is smudged scarlet across her bottom lip and Cupid's bow. Her eyes are crazed and triumphant, and her red hair is a violent cloud above her scalp. The glowing green rip seals shut behind her. Beside her, from a new vibrant slit, the manicured hands of a second woman grab onto the edges of the air before the tear can seal itself shut. A tall black boot emerges, followed by flowing red and purple skirts. Their wearer, a beautiful woman with loose blonde curls, steps out and claps with excitement, jumping from one foot to the other as the shimmering doorway closes. A third plumper woman forces her torso through the last flickering green opening. She grins at us with a crooked mouth, then waves at the blonde woman to help drag her fully into our world. Her dark hair is sculpted like a witch's hat over her head, and she's dressed in a rust-colored bodice with heavy plaid skirts. The brunette clutches at the blonde as she slides through the parted air, and then the space behind her seals with a pop, leaving no hint that it ever existed. The women look around, grinning. They are wildly impossible, and yet somehow perfectly placed, as if they never left this ramshackle house. My heart stops beating for a moment, and a lump rises in my throat. This can't be happening! But a larger, more terrified part of me can't quiet the chorus running through my head. They're real. They're real. They're real. They're real. What the hell? I breathe. But neither Travis nor Isabella has an answer for me. Travis quickly grabs the spellbook and hides it behind his back. Luckily, only I seem to have noticed him do so. My family's story was true. And now Mom and Dad and Aunt Danny are gone. The redhead takes in Isabella, then me, then Travis. And she moves down the line, her grin growing wider and wider and pushing against the edges of her face.
We're back,
Winifred Sanderson sings. With a swell of sinister delight, the house fills with the sound of the Sanderson sisters cackling. The witch is back. Wiffle Waffle. Winifred, Sarah, and Mary Sanderson stand before me,
The first beaming, the second preening, and the third licking her lips like she's ready for an early Thanksgiving feast. Aunt Dani has always been especially descriptive in her retellings of their harrowing Halloween night, and the sisters look exactly as she described, especially Winifred, who seems to tower above the room, wielding her confidence and authority like a weapon. Her cheeks are flushed, maybe from the October cold, and her wild eyes can't seem to settle on a color as they comb over the three of us.
"What have we here?"
Winifred croons.
"Something tasty?"
Travis grabs my wrist and tugs, but I can't seem to move. I'm scared out of my mind, but I'm also angry that my family is gone and that these witches are here grinning, like they've just won the resurrected witch lottery, which I guess they kind of have. As my blood pressure builds, I feel a crackle in the air. The hair on the back of my neck prickles. Somehow, the feeling brings me courage.
"You must be coming into your powers," Travis had joked. And yet,
no. I don't take my eyes off Winifred. From my parents' stories, I know that she's bound to be the mastermind of it all.
"What did you do to my family?"
I demand.
"Do?"
Winifred repeats in a needling voice.
"Why, I've been in hell, sweet girl, where your family is now."
Hell.
"It's not all it's cracked up to be," Winifred continues. "There's not much to do there."
"No doing at all,"
Sarah says sadly. She prances over to prod Travis's biceps. He snatches his arm away from her, eyeing the blonde witch suspiciously. Images of demons with tridents and torches flash through my mind. What have I done? I never thought I was putting my family in danger. I thought that the spirit board and coming here tonight was all just a fun joke, and now my family's in hell?
"If there was any doing," Winifred continues, "it was you, my dear. We heard your siren call from the other side."
"It was a lovely invitation,"
agrees Mary with a goofy smile, clasping her hands over her heart.
"Sweet girl,"
she adds, parroting Winifred with a lick of her lips. Winifred raises both hands and strikes a pose.
"So, here we are,"
she announces, as her arms drop back to her sides. Her words gain a sharp edge.
"Now, where's dinner?"
She eyes me, and I know it's meant to intimidate, but it barely registers. I'm still stuck on the fact that my reading that stupid spirit board is what catapulted everyone into this hot mess in the first place.
"I didn't mean to bring you back. I didn't even know you were real. And now my family? Are they?"
I pause to take a deep breath.
"I didn't mean to read that spell,"
I say in a voice that I hope makes me sound confident and a bit dangerous.
"You tricked me."
"Not I,"
says Winifred.
"No, it was my book."
"Book? Where are you, my darling?"
"Your book?" I quickly cover.
"What book?"
Winifred looks around the house, squinting.
"I know my dear sweet book is here. It called upon us with its spell and tricked you into reading it.
You've got it, don't you?"
She eyes Isabella, then me, and last, Travis.
"Ah, yes," she grins. "Time I show you my favorite trick."
"A trick, a trick, a trick,"
says Sarah, clapping gleefully.
"You horrible—"
I don't get to finish my insult before lightning crackles through the whole house, the green-tinged forks of it striking everything in their path. I'm lucky Travis has better reflexes than I do, because the lightning leaves a smoldering black spot on the floor where his feet were seconds ago. I quickly realize my red vintage coat has caught fire and hastily shrug it off. There's a tremble in the air, and all the light bulbs burst at once in small showers of sparks. The few bulbs on a candelabra erupt into eerie flames, leaving us in a murky half-light.
"Here's a trick for you,"
I shout, and press the shutter release on my camera. The flash blazes in Winifred's face, and the witches wince and shield their eyes. Winifred strikes out, without seeing, and I use my camera to protect myself. It goes flying from my hands and lands with a gut-wrenching crash as I push Travis ahead of me toward the front door, with Isabella racing just steps behind us. I feel awful leaving my family, wherever they are, but we'll have to figure that out when there aren't three evil witches about to fry the hair off our heads. We're down the path and on the dark, deserted street before I stop to catch my breath. My parents must have had a spare set of Sanderson keys because the gate is unlocked.
You okay?
Travis rests a hand on my shoulder. He has the spellbook under his arm. I look at him and freeze.
Isabella!
I shout, surveying the empty street.
Where is she?
Travis looks around.
She was right here a second ago. Wasn't she?
I turn back toward the Sanderson house. The windows crackle with a green-white light. Then everything goes still. This is all very, very bad.
She's still inside. We have to go back for her,
I insist. Travis grabs me by both arms before I can dash back onto the Sanderson property.
If we both get electrocuted, we can't help anyone, including and especially your family,
he tells me. Your family. His words slam into me.
Hell,
Winifred said. My parents are in hell.
But Isabella,
I say,
we have to help.
There's a distant cackle and the sound of hurried footsteps. I pull Travis closer to me, ducking into the bushes at the side of the road. The sisters spill down the walk and look up and down the road.
I remember this wretched town,
Winifred says, stepping into the middle of the street.
Back on Earth for a third time, she crows.
What mother would say if she could see us now?
At that, the three witches step forward together, lifting their faces to the moon.
Mother,
they sigh.
Perhaps she can return, if things go according to plan. But first, we have things to find, sisters.
The spell book,
shouts Mary.
The blood moonstone,
chimes in Sarah. Mary takes another sharp sniff.
I smell children, Winnie,
she says, grabbing the arm of the red-haired witch.
Hush, Mary, says Winifred, brushing her off. The whole world smells like children.
It is Halloween night, and we're in for a treat.
She turns toward town and hurries down the asphalt road.
Keep up, you wiffle waffles. We haven't time to waste.
Wiffle waffle, wiffle waffle,
Sarah crows, hopping back and forth as she bobs her head, clapping her hands gleefully. She stops to beam at Mary. A second later, they both take off, after Winifred, gone.
Come on,
I say, tugging Travis back through the gate. I'm desperate to see if Isabella's okay, and I pray she either stayed hidden or escaped another way. The creepy candelabra lights are still on inside the house, which makes it look less frightening as we jog up the steps. But once we're through the door, I take a deep breath. I'd known the place would be trashed after that whirlwind. But coming in cold, it really doesn't look like anyone could have survived this. Furniture is overturned, and broken glass is everywhere. Dried herbs and pickled unknowns are scattered across the floor. Even with all the evidence strewn in front of me, I can't believe that the story is true.
It's always been true.
Isabella? I call in a low voice, afraid that even though the witches are gone, they'll somehow hear us. I can hear my own heartbeat, loud in my ears.
This can't be happening,
I tell myself, and yet, clearly, it is.
Neon Neptunium nickel,
Travis mutters to himself as he picks over the fallen debris. He was an anxious kid, and his dad taught him to recite the periodic table of the elements to deal with stress.
Niobium nitrogen? Oh, hell no!
I find he's discovered a shattered jar oozing a green liquid, and what looks like tongues. Across the room, there's a whimper and the sound of something scrabbling against wood. I point to where a tall cabinet is tipped against the wall, its two front legs angled over the floor.
Are you for real?
Travis hisses.
This is the part of the movie where you peek under a cabinet and a zombie Wolverine jumps out and eats your face off.
I ignore him. My ankle boots thud louder on the floor than I'd like, but I try to tread as softly as possible. I lean down to peer beneath the cabinet.
Something barrels out from beneath it, careening toward my face. I shriek and fall over in my rush to back away.
Zombie Wolverine! Travis shouts. Zombie Wolverine!